Good morning. Welcome to the study session of Thursday, September 20th, 2007. We'll start by excusing the mayor and council member Jones, who are not able to be with us today. We have eight items on our agenda. The first one is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the process for disposition of the southwest corner of University and Mesa Drive. And I don't think we're actually going to get rid of the southwest corner of University and Mesa Drive. So what's the plan here?
Good morning, Vice Mayor, council members. I'm Shelley Allen with the Town Center Development Office, and with me this morning is Charlotte Christian with Phoenix Commercial Advisors and Shannon Selby with Phoenix Commercial Advisors. And we're here this morning to talk about the developer selection process for the southwest corner of University and Mesa Drive. And as you can tell by this map, and I do have handouts, I think in each one of your places, so you can follow along if you'd like to. This site's a very important site for several reasons. One, it's a gateway into the downtown area. And also the proximity and the possible linkages to all the important assets that we already have in the downtown area. Assets like the amphitheater, the hotel, both museums, the Mesa Arts Center, all of our existing businesses and restaurants that are located along Main Street, the main library, and the existing site of the Business and Industry Institute with MCC, and also the potential expansion site for the downtown campus. A little bit of background. In March of 2007, as you remember this year, we came before council and received direction to hire a broker that would help us market this property to a master developer using the considerations of price, mixed-use development, compatibility with the downtown campus, and the parking needs. As part of this process to select a broker, we held interviews and we developed a team to help us with that. It comprised of city staff, the Mesa Grande Community Alliance representative, and Downtown Mesa Association representative. And as a result of those interviews during this process, Phoenix Commercial Advisors was selected as our broker. And at this time, I'll turn it over to Charlotte Christian to talk a little bit about their marketing and outreach strategy.
We started the marketing program by putting it on a LoopNet site. And the LoopNet is a commercial listing. It's like MLS, multiple listing service. It's available to anybody who accesses the site. They have 970,000 hits a month. It's about 2.2 million people who belong to it. We put it on LoopNet. We sent out 500 direct emails. We have a brokers list, office developers, retail developers. We put all this, about 500 emails out to developers and brokers. Then personally, we contacted about 55 people who we thought were candidates for urban mixed use. 82 principals accessed the site on LoopNet that we have a record of, and 110 brokers that registered also. So we know we have a list of the people who accessed the site. We don't know people who may have not registered. The local brokers that we, our local developers that we went and talked to and met with were like Suncor, DMB, Opus, Kitchell. Then we went to the national developers. We knew that that there were urban mixed-use developers in other cities, and we wanted to look at their projects and bring them in to look at the site. Those people were CityMark out of San Diego, Centrum Properties out of Chicago, Smithfield out of Chicago, Sumitomo out of New York, who does projects in Phoenix, Urban Partners out of L.A., Oliver McMillan out of San Diego, and also Goldman Sachs. I met with them in New York. We looked for financial partners as well as developers. We put together a marketing brochure. We tried to show the connections that this site had to the city and cast the vision for the city that you all have done here. We wanted to show the unique opportunity this site has to develop a mixed use in the heart of the city of 450,000 people. You have a unique opportunity. Physically posted a sign. We met with economic development people. We also marketed to architects, engineers, and construction companies. We contacted all interested developers that either called or responded in some way and informed them of the July 30, there was a possible deadline on July 30th for a letter of interest. If they were interested in the property, we wanted them to get a letter in. We received four. And there was four of them were qualified, and they understood it was a mixed-use development that would be there. So their desire was, for the city, was that we wanted somebody who could execute, master plan and execute a good development. We didn't have any specifics other than it should be something that's going to really connect to the city, support the arts and the downtown, and give housing and multifamily or office or retail. We didn't specifically say we want any one of these things. We just said this is what a mixed-use site should encompass. We had four, and the reason that site, the people that who didn't choose to give us a letter of interest or letter of intent was either it was too small or too large, too expensive, unfamiliar with mixed use. Some people didn't want to do all of it. Some people, we suggested that they take maybe a big multifamily developer and a senior housing developer, take two aspects of it, bring a partner in for retail, and so that they could make it a truly mixed use site. Some wanted parcels, but not all of it. The interested developers that we have letters from right now as CDK Partners, their partner in downtown's Phoenix Cityscape project. That's a 2.5 million square foot project that's underway. It hasn't broken ground yet, but it will. The principals with that company are very well seasoned in experienced in mixed use. They've done lots of projects. One of the principals is from Vancouver Housing Authority and was responsible for a lot of mixed use in Vancouver and Portland. They're shortlisted also. Crosswinds National has a Phoenix office, and they do master plan communities in California, Texas, North Carolina, Virginia, and Florida. They do commercial mixed use, including office, retail, and town centers. They're a very good company. Concord, Eastridge, Durant, and Fairfield, they added as a residential component. They had done a study on this site some time ago. They wanted to be considered. Durant is their architect, and they would form a partnership to do it. The Athena Group has just established an office about 2 years ago in Los Angeles, but they're actually done a lot of stuff in New York. They've done urban and suburban. They're really an urban and suburban developer. They're in the process of redeveloping the New Jersey waterfront with some projects. They've completed quite a few Manhattan projects, but they've also done mixed-use communities like in Virginia. And they are a very impressive group as well. All four of these candidates we were really pleased with. All four of the developers have recognized and expressed interest in cooperating with Mesa Community College, and they feel like that is a wonderful opportunity to put together a mixed-use site that includes also a learning center for the active seniors who might be a resident here or young professionals. They feel like that is a great connection for them, so that they are interested in that, as well as the Escobedo project across the street, which would be another phase if that was available at a later time. They would put a different kind of housing product on that.
And then also, there are several advantages to coordinating this development with the MCC downtown campus, and those advantages are shared parking and other potential amenities, traffic and pedestrian flow, that we coordinate the issues there, and also the aesthetic coordination. So it makes a lot of sense to us to continue to work with MCC and make sure that both of these projects match, not only aesthetically, but also, like I said, the flow of traffic and everything else. The next steps that we're looking for is to ask these four developers to submit proposals based on the following: their experience with quality mixed-use development, conditions of sale, meaning restricted type uses, the same type of restricted uses that we put on 51 and 55 East Main and 225 East Main, meaning pawn shops, tattoo parlors, and the non-chartered financial institutions. And also their financial terms and their project schedule and a conceptual design. And with the conceptual design, a commitment to a quality mixed-use development, maximum density, coordinating with MCC, and also parking. And what we're here for today is to seek council direction to proceed negotiating with these four interested developers for the best and final proposal. And our goal is to present the recommended developer to council in 45 days. And also Bernie Ronan is here with MCC, and I think he'd like to address you as well.
Good morning, Dr. Ronan.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you briefly about this project from our perspective. In addition to the benefits that Shelley alluded to, that I would call tactical benefits to emerging our proposals, it seems to me that the overarching benefit to this is it represents the partnership that our district has always wanted to be involved in with the city. As you recall, in 2004, at a kind of historic meeting of this council and our governing board, both bodies endorsed the concept of a downtown campus and endorsed that the city and the district would work together to achieve this. And so I think this proposal is simply consistent with that long-term vision we have of a unique kind of partnership-driven campus. We are moving fairly aggressively to put in what we are calling phase one of this campus. We're consolidating programs from our Country Club and Brown facility to the downtown campus, which means that as of January, we'll be bringing about 900 students to downtown Mesa for fire science and healthcare programs. NAU is going to be opening their East Valley operations on the fourth floor at the Centennial site, which will mean about 600 students per semester that they will be bringing in from throughout the East Valley. Our Network Academy program that's been in place for years is growing, which we're excited about, and that's another 450 students. So I informed our campus yesterday, in anticipation of this meeting today, that as of January, we would be looking at 2,000 students taking higher education courses in downtown Mesa. So the downtown campus is underway, and we're excited about that. We're putting administrative leadership in place to oversee this campus, and we're working with both Mesa Public Schools and Northern Arizona University. This is new terrain for the educators as well. We've never linked up with a K-12 partner and a university partner and actually jointly developed programs, but all three of us are excited about this. The brokers briefed Deb Duval about both the four proposals that have been submitted and about this process, and Mesa Public Schools is fully on board in terms of this process. We've got a lot to work out in the next 45 days, as you can imagine, because we're a public system, Mesa Public Schools is a public system, the city is a public system, and so we anticipate that as these public systems look at this process and vet it, there won't be any problems, but We have a lot of work to do on the educator side as well as pairing up with the process that Shelley outlined, which is a fairly aggressive process by any standards. But part of what we're excited about is the aggressive nature of the process. I can remember the last time we were together that Councilman Jones, when he took the mic about the proposal that Chancellor Glasper was talking about in March, he said, "Do it!" And so we're taking that directive to heart and doing it. I just wanted to mention, too, that Chris Brady and I had a conference conversation yesterday with Rufus Glasper, and he feels as well that what we're doing is consistent with the spirit of what we have been trying to do for the last 3 years as partners. I'm going to invite Chris to come to our governing board and brief them on this so that they understand all the dimensions of it and what's expected. But we're excited about this, and I just wanted to kind of lend the voice of the college and the district to moving forward and encourage your approval of this next step.
Thank you. We really appreciate your taking the time to be here this morning. We've been working on this partnership for some time, and if Kyle were here, I'm sure he would once again say, do it. I know he's very anxious to have this move forward. It's in his district, and it's important to him. Councilmember Whalen.
Morning, Bernie. Have you acquired additional space to handle all these students temporarily?
We're using shoehorns and lots of different things. What we're doing, frankly, is we're moving back into rental space that we have on the second floor at 165 North Centennial, the city building that we have been leasing from you and we hope to acquire as part of this development project at 145 North Centennial. We are also using every available square inch of that because now we have NAU on the fourth floor with their students. So we're going to be cramming students into every nook and cranny we can find in downtown. But at this point, the student growth that I outlined, we have been able to accommodate in existing facilities in downtown.
How far out do you anticipate the building of the first MCC campus facility to be?
How far out?
How far out in the timeline?
Well, because we're riding the coattails of what you're being asked to approve today, one of the developers discussed an 18-month time frame, and that's partly what is exciting. I mean, Shelley didn't allude to that, but if we tie our project development to the city's project development, I think we could fairly anticipate that we'll get it done quicker than we would if we were doing it independently. So I would say 18 months to 2 years.
Do I remember correctly, about a $10 million bond is what you've got available?
Right. We have $10 million in bond capacity that the voters approved and earmarked for the MCC downtown campus. But we're also working with Mesa Public Schools and NAU to figure out how we can creatively finance this and operate it jointly.
And I think we've bonded for the infrastructure.
Yes. I think there's approximately 14 or 15 million in the previous bond that was designed to help with the infrastructure improvements.
Thank you.
Councilmember Summers.
Dr. Ronan, one of the positive aspects of having higher education located in your downtown areas, it tends to bring students down there who eat, shop, sleep, play, get arrested. We'll back up on that. I'm curious, what is the demographic of the students at MCC, particularly in the downtown campus, or more appropriately, what do you see as the demographic? How many adult learners will there be versus full-time students? How many in-residence learners? How many of these folks are going to want to live, work, and play in the downtown area while they're going to school at the downtown facility?
Good question. The demographic of this student population is different than it would be at our other two campuses, mainly because what we have always tried to do with programming at this campus is what we are kind of calling destination programming. In other words, that the students who come to this campus come for a specific program and are fairly focused on accomplishing the objectives of that program. For example, the students that will be there for fire science training, I don't need to tell you how serious students are about the programs that they're getting into in order to get employed in the fire service. We also have what we call healthcare core students. These are pre-nursing students. Again, there's 2,000 people on a waiting list for slots in the Maricopa colleges to get into a nursing program. So these are fairly focused students and fairly dedicated students. As well, the students who are taking programs on the fourth floor at our Network Academy are there for specific reasons. All these have to do with workforce development, from my point of view. So arguably, they're going to be a more serious and more focused student than the 18 or 19-year-old who might be on their way to Arizona State University and has taken a class at Southern and Dobson. The other thing I wanted to mention is that we have commissioned an economic impact analysis, which we will be sharing with you shortly, that looks at the economic impact of this campus development over the next 15 years. So we think it's going to be a fairly significant contribution, not only to the economy of the city, but to the revitalization of downtown.
Well, part of what's happened in Tempe has been because of the growth of Arizona State University. They have a lot of in-residence students that traditionally community colleges don't have. So I'd be interested to see what the economic impact says and how many of those students might actually want to live in that area. And I think whoever one of these four developers are would be interested in seeing those numbers and creating that living environment on top of working environment there. So you almost have a in-residence student body.
Absolutely. And in fact, the preliminary conversations we've had have indicated that several of these developers are consciously contemplating how to create the possibility of students actually living on the site. The other thing I would lift up is the ability to bring a university into downtown Mesa is considerable. I'm sure you're aware of how Mesa's bachelor's degree achievement stacks up in among its citizenry against neighboring cities. In other words, we could do better in terms of offering bachelor's degrees to our citizens, and that's partly what we're excited about, is this partnership with NAU will bring that capacity. It's already represented with the presence in the city of ASU Polytechnic, but having another university now offering bachelor's degrees opportunity to the citizens of Mesa, I think is going to be good for the overall economic development of the city.
Okay, yeah, I think this will be an important component of that, not the only component. We're going to have to see more office space and others to bring those residents down as well.
Thank you. Councilmember Rawls.
Thank you. As everyone knows, this isn't the way I would have preferred to go, but in looking at the list of the four criteria that the submitted proposals are going to be, the first one deals with experience with quality mixed-use infill development projects. I understand this is an infill project, but I'm not sure that at this point, once you've got four quality developers who, you may have one that's done a lot high quality but not infill. I wouldn't get too hung up on whether or not they have infill experience. If they're quality developers, I believe they can do infill. I know it's an infill project, and I know we talked about that before as being an essential component, but at this point, once you've identified these four, I don't think I would give much greater or lesser weight to somebody who does or does not have a lot of infill experience. If they're what you described in terms of their quality and their past projects, I'm sure they can handle this, whether it's infill or not. So that was my only sort of nuance that I didn't want to have emphasized too much.
Let me just clarify something before I speak on this. The name of Goldman Sachs was raised. My son is an employee of Goldman Sachs in Los Angeles. He's a broker. Their name is not on the list here. I don't think they're part of this.
So, Vice Mayor, that means I think Charlotte was just trying to...
Charlotte had talked about the range of people she had spoken to.
Really, the only ones we're talking about right now are these four. And let me just take this moment is, recently, we've now been approached by at least one other group that wanted to be part of this. We've hesitated to include them because we did give a deadline for all those that were contacted of July 30th, I believe. And so I think the concern is that we felt like we gave everyone and put a notice out there that was the date. I'm sure there's others out there that are very qualified and could do a great job, but we kind of, in order to kind of manage the process well, we've essentially established that these are the only ones going forward that we'll continue to discuss with. So I just wanted to make sure council knows that. And so anyone that we've talked to before is not now included. It's just these four that we're recommending to move forward with.
I just want to make that clear. Sure. So somebody doesn't think I've got a conflict on this. I think that the other way of looking at the housing, as opposed to just looking at it as students can live there, I think that the way to look at it is everyone who's living there is a potential student. Because workforce development, increasing the education of our citizens is absolutely critical for us to be competitive in the global economy. So I think it's great that you're bringing this basically what would it be, a P16 program? Or are you even looking at potential beyond bachelor's degrees in downtown?
Oh, absolutely, yes. We're looking beyond. And if I could follow up on that thought, and it kind of dovetails with what Councilman Summers was asking about. One of the developers is contemplating bringing in what we euphemistically refer to as active adults in a significant way. And we have been developing what we have been calling Mesa Life Options through a partnership with the Piper Trust, which is programming that gets at the boomer population and how to re-engage them. So I think you're absolutely right. I think us linking up with this development gives us a chance to bring in new students that we had not contemplated in our current plans. And that's part of what we're excited about.
I love this. I love how we try and come up with terms. Active adult. Am I now an active adult because I'm over the age of 50? I was sort of an inactive adult before then. Or... Is it? I told somebody one day that I didn't like the term senior citizen, and they came and they said, well, what if we use this? I said, you know what I've decided? It doesn't matter what you use, because what you're really saying to me is I'm getting older. And whereas when I was 20, that was good. When I'm over 50, it doesn't sound as good. I really appreciate the quality developers that you have brought forward here. And Mr. Brady, anytime you're doing a project like this, you have to have a timeline. There has to be a cutoff at some point. But I think to keep that in your back pocket, if for some reason it doesn't work out here with these folks, that we have other people who have been interested.
Absolutely.
It was very clear to these people that we were not giving away the land. I want to make sure that that's clear.
Yes.
All right. Vice Mayor, we actually did a updated appraisal.
Yes, we did.
Correct, and that was part of the information we gave them.
So. Excellent. Councilmember Griswold.
You know, downtown, there's over 5,000 people that work down here every day, and there's been a lack of new housing. So there's a lot of people that would like to live downtown, walk to work, and not have to mow a big yard, et cetera. So I would definitely encourage to be a component of condominiums or a living area there, as well as just with the MCC component, too. I'm very excited to hear about you bringing your nurse practitioner program down here. The hospitals really appreciate that. We just built 3 new hospitals. We desperately need nurses and doctors. So if you ever want to do a medical program, let us know too.
Thank you. I did have one other question that I forgot to put that I forgot to ask, and that is use of classrooms at the Arts Center. There is classroom space there. I'm not sure how fully occupied it is and whether or not that's a potential use for additional classes. When the Art Center was conceived, I know that the council that was working at that time and working with MCC at that time was talking about potentially having programs that were training programs for people in those fields occurring at the Art Center. Is that something you're still discussing, Bernie?
We're open to any and all possibilities. We had a marvelous meeting yesterday, or 2 days ago, with Johann Zeitzman, invited him over to the college and had a conversation about the partnership that we've had and explored a number of new possibilities of things that we could do together. So we will be actively pursuing more opportunities. I didn't count the 700 or so students that are participating in the partnership between Mesa Community College and Mesa Arts Center in the 2000, because those students are moving through a program that's kind of attached to this, but that's additional student population, if you will, that's part of this downtown campus, and we consider them part of our operation.
Thank you. Are there any other questions on the part of the council, or do I have a motion? And it says presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the process for disposition. Do you need a motion, or do you just need direction? You've heard from everyone. We want you to move ahead. And so without objection, that's what we'll do. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here today. The second item is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on expenditure limitation alternatives.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning, Vice Mayor and Council. This is a continuing discussion from last week. We discussed preliminarily the two major options that we're looking for direction going forward on expenditure limitation. And there were some questions that came out of that discussion that would come back for today to further explain and then probably ask for some direction on how you want to proceed from now until November 5th. One of the questions that came out on number 2 of your slide there, talked about what our estimated overage on the expenditure limitation 08-09 would be, which was projected at $100 million. So I went back and saw what was budgeted within the voter-approved programs, and it's just about $96 million. So the only capacity that we had in growth in the expenditure capacity was just over $4 million. Now, what's significant about that, if we recall the 06-07 reductions, we would be further over that limit if we hadn't taken about $16 million in inflated cost out of our budget in 06-07. So further pressure on that expenditure side. Another thing to point out here is the current CIP only has the Prop 400 in at the reduced program level, what we're paying cash for right now, because we're talking about it, and it's the next subject matter, is the possible bonding of the rest of that. So any of the cash that we'd have to be paying in association with that will be coming forward and would be added on top of that expenditure limit.
Could you clarify that, please? If we bonded and we got cash from Prop 400, could we use the Prop 400 cash to repay the bonds?
Cash payments count against the expenditure limitation.
I see.
It's the expenditure, not necessarily the source.
Okay.
And what Chuck is saying is we have definitely put a hold on the major CIP projects, specifically those related to the regional transportation program because of the concern of not having the match. Now, we'll talk about that later, but if that had been programmed into this number, the difference would have been even greater than the $100 million.
Right, and the distinction I want to make, anything we bond is not counted, but anything that we have to come up with cash on a local match would be counted as an expenditure. So bond proceeds are not counted, but the other. So I want to make sure that's real clear. So sometimes when you're up against the expenditure limitations, that's one of the issues on the alternatives is having to borrow to do your projects. You're forced into a borrowing situation.
Excuse me, Councilmember Summers.
How does federal grants fit into that? We receive a number of federal grants. UASI is a great example of those, urban area security initiatives for terrorism. How do those count in the budget? Would we be able to spend that money? How would they be cut off?
Grants are an exclusion, and I'm going to go further into that. That's going to be real kind of the disconnect that I see on some of the issues with permanent base adjustment. So one of the things that I did is on page number 3, if
moved it along.
Maybe clarify, and I want to go right to that, but I think it'd be good to kind of to get there for you so you can fully understand. I went and forecasted out what our forecasted base would be on the adjustment. In 1979-80, City of Mesa's budget was $50,090,000, but under their base calculation. Using their limiters and their factors, I've projected it out to 12-13, which would grow to $568 million. So the forecasted percentage change would be in the range of 3.6 to on the high end, so an average fiscal year difference of 3.6. If you remember our forecast, that's right at the edge of our forecasted growth, typically on a growth percentage, with no population factors counted in. The other issue that I kind of see with this is we adopted almost a billion two in budget this year. We've come up with, I think, a very good method of explaining how we arrive at our budget at this time, where it's explainable to people, where we've broken it down into components. I think one of the problems I foresee with this is when you've got a forecasted limit of $476 million, there's a little bit, in based on whatever we decide on a permanent base adjustment, explaining what you're adopting as a budget, which will be significantly higher than that, to those that thought they were limiting us to that limit. Because on the next page, and this goes right to your question, Councilman Summers, you've got a list of exclusions that are high dollar exclusions. So you're going to be adopting a budget that will be over those limits and then bringing these exclusions back off to calculate what your compliance is with the limits. One of the large issues is the debt service. We're at about $105 million a year in debt service. The proceeds from bonds, that's probably going to run us, depending on what we go forward with, at least $100 to $150 million a year. So you're $250 million a year over your exclusions with those two categories alone. Dividend and interest revenue, that varies from year to year with us based on how much we've got in fund balances and the interest rates. Our trust and agency accounts, if you recall, that's about a $55 million difference for us.
Councilmember Summers.
Since it's not on the list, I probably have my answer already, but I'm going to ask it. Mesa has a couple of enterprise funds with the electric company and the gas company. Those do not come off?
They're not excluded. They're part of your operating budget.
you have to project those into your phase.
Whereas other cities do not have that.
They don't, may not have a full as range. Most of, you know, most cities have some kind,
water,
maybe
waste,
not
water.
As full of range as we do. And then we get to your grants. Those vary significantly from year to year. That does give you allowance for grants. Your LTAF assistance, that's another one. That's $4 to $5 million a year, up to $7 million, depending on how the lottery's doing. And then our HERF revenues over our base. That was, I think our base back then was somewhere around $5 million. We're going to be at about $47 million in 2008-09. So you've got a long list of these high-dollar exclusions that does provide a little bit of disconnect from what you're adopting versus what your expenditure limitation is. So just want to go through that explanation.
Councilmember Ross.
But that's not unlike the same disconnect that we have when we try to explain the budget now.
It's difficult.
I mean, it's really the same explanation, just wrapped in different clothing.
New nuances, I guess that would be the good way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah. Councilmember Griswold.
I know grants vary from year to year and contributions, et cetera. What's an average grant? Do you have any idea of grant funding?
It's decreasing because of the federal government tightening up. Most of it's going toward the homeland security issues and so forth. It'd be better, because I think of it in carryover and so forth, they're probably getting anywhere $3 to $5 million a year in those kind of grants that on a consistent basis.
Are you counting CDBG as a grant?
No, okay. I didn't even count that in, but CDBG is another consideration.
I was going to say, we're over $3 million a year in CDBG. Yeah.
I'm just talking about the ones that vary. CDBG is a relatively constant.
No, the total grant figure, this would be, push us over, are these excluded or are they?
They're excluded from your
CDBG
expenditure.
CDBG is, so okay, so we've got probably $8 million, $6
million. Depending on how much they're carrying over and expending in a given year.
Yeah, Mayor, or Vice Mayor, Council. I think what we're trying to show is that the numbers on page 3 are the very kind of like base numbers that we would have to use in establishing the permanent adjustment. Now, what we'd have to do then is the ones that are included in these that we would have to try to project or estimate going forward. And this excludes, again, this excludes any future capital dollars. So we'd have to sit down and project what would those be each year out some period of time into the future. So we're just trying to establish what the process is for permanent, and we can talk about the other. And I think the concern we were having was, after now seeing this adjusted number, but then each year the council would be adopting a budget of $1.2 million. We just want to make sure it's clear to council that there would be another reconciliation that's going to have to take place. Is okay, we're adopting this number, which is significantly higher than what we said when we came to the voters. But we just want to make sure we're just trying to make sure everybody understands the differences there. So,
right, thank you.
Well, and we had several questions. If we go to page number 4, we start talking about had a list of cities that you'd like me to, had me contact this past week. On considerations for permanent base. One of the major considerations all of the cities voiced was no one ever intended it for it to be a permanent base adjustment. All of them put a window on what their intended adoption was. 10 to 20 years were the typical windows that were adopted. A good example, Tucson was listed on our list from the League of Cities and Towns as a permanent base adjustment city. Well, it so happens that they couldn't keep within their permanent base adjustment, so they went to home rule in 06-07 and listed that as the major concern. They just, with the growth issues, they could not keep up with the permanent base. There was just too many pressures on it, so they've adopted home rule in 06-07.
And Chuck, let's stipulate here that their permanent base adjustment that they might have put in there might have been a very, very high permanent base. I mean, it doesn't hold them to this formula. They could have gone through and calculated and said these are our traditional expenditures and all those kinds of things. It only holds them to the formula in successive years, not for the initial setting of the base.
In successive years, correct.
Right. Okay.
So, and they used varied methods to calculate what their permanent base adjustment was. But under any of the scenarios that they selected, all of them had pressures eventually, or experiencing pressures. In fact, one is because of their permanent base adjustments become so tight, they have been delaying projects in their capital program to stay under their permanent base.
And in the case, for instance, of our neighboring city of Scottsdale, which I believe did a permanent base adjustment in 06, their permanent base adjustment with a population of half of Mesa's, they have a budget that is basically the same as Mesa's. And so, you know, I think that when this is being discussed, there is some thought that there's some formula that's coming into play, and this somehow signals that somebody is highly fiscally responsible, when this doesn't really necessarily signal that at all.
So I just listed the items that came up with in those discussions. That it was the length of the term, the cash payments, and the reason I list the cash payments is the variance of the impact on your expenditure limitation. The limiting factors of the state formula not keeping up with the actual cost increases. Things like health care come up, you know, 10.7 a year. The petroleum price increases and the impacts on that had on steel and construction prices, those came up. And then they also listed that the voter approved issues have significant impact on that. Things that they didn't plan for in their original adjustment, something on a regional basis you can't tie a local election to, did have impact on their permanent basis.
So that question that was asked last week by the mayor regarding the potential for a statewide transportation election would have an impact on those cities if those cities were actually doing the projects themselves, but it wouldn't have an impact if the projects were being done by another agency on their behalf. Is that how it might work?
If there's bonding involved and so forth, it depends on the local match you have to come up with. And it's all those scenarios you have to figure out.
Thank you.
Considerations for implementing home rule. That one requires a vote every 4 years, and then the budget is established by the council. Now, if we want to continue to talk about both the items going forward to November 5th, November 5th being our deadline for calling the election, in order to continue to talk about home rule, we need to receive direction that that's what you would like to do, and that would need to come from today. We would have notices to publish on the 29th of September, October the 6th, for public hearings on the 15th and the 5th. So,
sorry, Councilmember Griswold.
I just had a question on projections. The new census numbers just came out a couple weeks ago and had us listed 493,000 people. We've been using 460,000 in all our current. What are we using now on crime statistics and projections, et cetera?
Well, I had some staff do some research on that because I've been quite surprised to see that number. That is, I don't believe, an official census number.
I read it in the Tribune, so it has to.
But from what I can understand, it's not the census number. And the numbers that are controlled by how we get our state expenditure limitation is DES projections. They don't use census numbers. So, yeah, we try to coordinate and try to reconcile between the different agencies, but that is not the number that we use for expenditure limitation.
Or for crime statistics or anything else. So we may have 493,000 people, but we're doing crime statistics based on 460,000. So we have more per 1,000 that way.
We more closely project and forecast our growth along the DES and MAG numbers.
Okay. So we may be under reporting by about 300,000.
Until we can get an official recognition of something other than that, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Sounds like that movie line that says, what does it cost to fly to New York? And they said, nobody knows, it changes every day. Councilmember Rawls.
Thank you. Can we go back to page 2 on your handout? The $100 million that's at the top of this is what we would anticipate if we were to continue along as we are now and adopt an 08-09 budget. We'd be $100 million over the expenditure limitation limit. And as I read this chart, 4% of that is due to factors other than voter-approved programs. So we're within 4% of the expenditure limitation after 28 years of experience.
Correct, sir.
But for the voter-approved programs. So a permanent base adjustment that took into account those voter-approved programs. And as the mayor suggested at our last meeting, whenever you go to the voters for another voter-approved program, you can also include a permanent base adjustment at the same time to accomplish the increase. But it's significant to me that with all the increases in health care costs, with all the increases in fluctuation and in commodity prices and gas and oil and all the other things and electricity, we're within 4% of the expenditure limitation, despite our incredible growth since 79, 80. Am I missing something?
I'd say you're totally correct, except for one thing we haven't been recognizing in our budgets, and that's been the growth factors that we really have. We've just been doing current levels of staffing. I mean, since 2001, the staffing levels here have maintained, even though we have continued to grow. And that's why I kind of pointed out the indicator on page number three,
right,
is just that the cost, even at our current levels of staffing, are within 0.25% of those factors on average.
Right. But we don't have, and correct me if I'm wrong, but as I remember the financial models going forward, we don't have an increase in level of services budget in because we don't have the revenue for it.
And that is true.
Okay, so if we wanted to go find the revenue for it, it would be a deliberate act that we were aware of that we could incorporate into a permanent base adjustment at the time that we went and sought that additional revenue.
If we have the proper horizons,
right.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm quite frankly surprised. I mean, you used the word last meeting, primarily caused by voter-approved programs. I didn't think primarily was going to mean 96% based upon the discussion we had last week. I'm surprised that we're this close after 28 years, if my math is right. I'm subtracting.
And the reason I used the forward-looking process is because I knew it was clean. We didn't have any new services added.
Right.
Going back historically, we get mixed and matched with maybe, you know, adding something to the budget that is not just. So that's why I used the forward-looking process.
And if I can go to the Home Rule page 6 implementation page, it talks about requiring a renewal vote every 4 years.
Yes.
And we have a memorandum from our city attorney that suggests that because of the way that election dates,
which is on blue paper.
It's on blue paper. I understand that. I'm not talking about, she raised the issue. I'm now talking about what I know from my own legal research. That the because the election dates have been messed around with us, if we have a home rule election in 2008 at our March election and it only lasts for 4 years, we wouldn't be able to have one in 2012 in time
for the expiration of that rule.
Right, because our election is going to be moved to September of 2012 and the authorization will only last until the end of June 2012.
Correct.
So if we go the home rule option, we would have to have another home rule election in probably 2010 in order to get us to the September 2012 home rule alternative.
Yes, sir.
So we're looking at not at this. Now, we could have them every 2 years under the permanent base adjustment if we wanted, but it looks like we're going to have 3 elections in 4 years. 5 years.
If we
go home rule.
If you want to return to a cycle that gets it back on the mayoral council.
So. Well, doesn't the legislature require us to get on that cycle eventually?
Well, no. It doesn't require that it be on the mayoral election. It requires it to be on a council member election.
Yes.
So we could go at 2010 and then back again at 2014, but it's not a citywide election. So the goal is to get it on mayoral election,
right.
So it's a citywide election.
From a cost standpoint and from a voter turnout standpoint and from a citizen participation standpoint, you'd like it on the best turnout election that you can get. Understand. Okay. My recommendation is that we continue. I guess you need to know something today if we want to do the home rule, because there's some public noticing processes that we have to go through. I think we need to continue to explore both options, and those things that need to be done for the home rule option need to be done. But one of the things that we think we need now is, if we do the permanent base adjustment, what would the realistic number be that would, so that we can evaluate that? And I know that's way too much for you to have accomplished in the week that you've had. So
yes,
I'm not, this is not intended as a criticism in any way. So thanks very much.
Councilmember Whalen.
if you were to do a home rule election and then it's called and this council virtually changes dramatically, could the new council then look at the permanent base adjustment in 2010, or would they have to wait until expiration in 2012 to switch back?
We would face the same situation there because the home rule is in place for 4 years. However, it would then expire before the council would have an opportunity to bring back either home rule or permanent base adjustment. So we would face the same issue.
There couldn't be a change midpoint. Once you adopt a home rule of 4 years, it's in place for 4 years. You couldn't switch to a permanent halfway through.
We would have to explore that. That is what is contemplated by the Constitution. What's not contemplated by the Constitution is this challenge that we are facing because of the change in our election dates. And it's because of that election date that causes the question between the do we need a 2010 election and can we change from home rule to permanent base. So we would look at that. You can certainly go from permanent base to home rule. I haven't explored the can you go from home rule to permanent base from 2008-2010, but I can certainly do that.
Thank you.
Councilmember Brisbane.
According to our current models, we just basically take, we have, let's say, 850 policemen right now with 460,000 people. We're going to grow to 650,000 by 2025. We're still going to have 850 policemen according to our budget. Is that basically?
What we do in the forecast right now, Councilmember Griswold, is that's correct on those services. We only do growth based on state law requirements. Solid waste, we're required to pick up the trash. So that is the one operating component that we budget in for growth capacity, is the additional trucks and staff to pick up the trash. That's a state law issue.
But firemen, we have about 400 and some. We're just going to stretch them to handle 650,000 according to our current financial model that was built in 1946.
That's the assumptions we're using going forward.
Okay, thank you.
And when we're looking at whether at being off by only 4%, and by the way, I think that is rather impressive, what that includes is, though, is the capital projects that have been deferred. As you said, basically the same staffing levels that we had in 2001 when our population was about 398,000 is my recollection. And so if we were building a permanent base adjustment, we would have to contemplate, in my opinion, adding additional staff, contemplate future councils addressing the issues of adding more police officers, more firefighters, those kinds of things. In that base adjustment, I think to look at the base adjustment and only look at it based on today's projections would be not a wise thing to do. And so I hope when you're going forward and looking at this, and by the way, I concur, Mr. Rawls, I think we need to move forward with both options. But I think to do it based on where we are today and the projections of today doesn't make sense. So hopefully when you look at it, you would look at it and model, if we added the police officers that we need, if we added the firefighters that we need, what would that look like in terms of the dollar amount? The other question I have is, if we did that and we said to the voters, okay, we're going for the permanent base adjustment, because what we're really struggling with today, what we're really grappling with, is a dilemma that was handed to us by the state legislature. It isn't one that we sought, it was one that was imposed on us. And could we go to them and say, our horizon for the permanent base adjustment is a horizon that gets us in line with the election standard that we need to be at. At that point in time, we'll look at it and see whether or not we need to do a different option. Is that a required, do you need to give that horizon to people? Did those cities that you talked about that had a 10 to 20 year horizon say, this is our horizon?
No one adopted that short of a horizon. I mean, if that was that would get us to 2012 election, so you're looking for a four-year window, no one adopted one that short.
Yeah, I think 10 and 20 were
10 and 20,
10
were,
and 20 were what permanent was.
Did they say to their voters when they were voting on it, look, we're looking at a 10-year horizon for this permanent base adjustment?
No, ma'am.
Okay, that's what I needed. Thank you. Is there any disagreement with asking for going forward holding the hearings that we need to have, doing those kinds of things in order to have the home rule in play here. Okay, I don't see any objection on that, so that's the direction that we're giving. Yes.
And Vice Mayor, I appreciate that direction, but also here, in order to be doing parallel paths, do you want us to go ahead, though, to work on setting up a number, you know, based on the assumption, you know, growth and assuming a CIP and some additional public safety, and then come back in the idea that there's a, what would be a permanent base number also? Because, I mean, that's something, November 5th really isn't that far away. So you want us to do that, too, is what I'm hearing.
Councilmember Whalen.
I think you need to go beyond public safety. I think it needs to be planning and research, development, all, you know, utility infrastructure, all those personnel potential costs that go along with the CIP.
Can I ask the council then, would you like us to look at both a two-year window and maybe a 10-year window, or do you want us just to bring back? Because, you know, we talked about, I was just thinking about Councilman Rawls said, you know, there is one way you can get back in a line, I guess, better, I'm not sure if that's the right word, but where you do, I think it was, four for the first one?
Yes, it would be until the 2012. That would get us back on the mayoral election for the home rule question.
That's right, it's the month that it hits. That's, I'm sorry. So we do 4-year or 10-year? Do you want us to bring the two numbers back, or do you want just the 4-year estimate?
I'd like to see a 5-year. I beg your pardon.
What would happen if, and that was a different subject, so you have every right to tell me to shut up.
Go for it. You still have the floor, Mike.
What would happen if we went to the permanent base and then decide and showed a reasonable amount of money over a 4-year period? It would be more easily understood, perhaps, than the 10-year. And then went back to home rule and failed. Would we be under the permanent cap at that point still?
Yes, you would still be under the permanent cap. And then you could not bring home rule back for another 2 years. So then you would be looking at 2014 to present, and that would not be a mayoral election, but you could bring it back in 2 years, in 2014.
Thinking of that, perhaps it's better to go beyond what the potential bad point would be, so we wouldn't be locked in at a rate you couldn't live with at 4 years. You know, I mean, if you're going to do it for 10, I think is the most reasonable way to do it.
Well, I think I was having some similar thoughts. That's why I was going for five years.
And
yeah,
ten.
5 and 10. Councilmember Rawls.
Well, I think since 4 years is sort of the number that, that's the years we have to deal with, I think we ought to do 4 and 10. Because 5 and 10 really falls into a no man's land.
Okay, and yes, on the other hand, 2000, that would put us theoretically, because if we adopt it in September 2012, it won't take effect until July 1, 2013. So actually the 5-year will fill the gap that we're going to have.
Yeah. So. Okay, it's a good point. Yeah. So, but I like 5 and 10 because I'd like to see what the two numbers are before we do it. Right. And I don't have any problem in the process of including, you know, projected capital, cash capital needs that are we're going to need to advance in order to get this. I don't have any problem with projecting in growth in services, but we need to be very careful with that because we don't have any revenue source identified to cover it. So.
Well, and that gets to my next question. Do you want me to take into account any potential regional issues that are on the horizon for capacity, like the freeway advancement, the stand monies, and so forth?
I think if we're aware of them, they should be included.
Okay. Yeah, Vice Mayor, Council, I think what we'll do, we'll set it up so that it'll be kind of a, you know, you'll see, we'll try to break them out, too, so you can bring it to the council so you can see which assumptions are being used and decide which ones are more probable than others. And we'll tell you why we may have included some versus others and then moving forward. But you can see that's the difficulty sometimes in these moving forward. But there are certain advantages, certainly, to the permanent, and we'll bring that number back to you.
Councilmember Summers.
Chris, on the 10-year horizons, when we're going to start to see the impact of some of the capital investment we're going to have to be putting into the MPG area, are we anywhere close in our planning to being able to figure that into the 10-year number?
Not at all.
It's going to make that a really difficult conversation.
We love a challenge.
I'm sure you do. All right.
best guess, we might have to look at that in the five-year numbers. We may be about 36 months out from initial expenditures that are significant in that area. So I don't think you just have a 10-year horizon challenge there. I think you have a five-year horizon challenge there.
Right. 5 years a challenge.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything else you need us to know?
You've given me enough.
All right. We just don't like you to be bored or wonder what you're going to do on your weekends, Chuck.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to item number 3, which is to hear a presentation discuss potential capital projects for transportation, and this certainly segues well from the last one.
I was going to say, we even have
Councilmember Rawls.
I just want to make sure that what you specifically needed for today, which is that you're going to start publishing notices on September 29th and October 6th, you know that?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for that clarification. Good morning, Mr. Martin.
Good morning, Vice Mayor. Pleasure to be here this morning. I'm here with Dan Clevenger and Alan Sanderson here from the Transportation Department to talk to you about our capital program this morning. And if you'd like, we can make this a more abbreviated approach since I know you have an executive session after this, I believe. So with that, I'd like to talk to you about our capital program. It's really divided into two parts, really. The first is the 29 regional transportation plan arterial street projects that are partially funded in the MAG regional transportation plan, and then the second component to it are the 17 non-regional transportation plan capital projects. These are more local projects. This includes the city share program, where the city participates with developers to fund the more regional needs associated with development projects. ITS projects. ITS stands for Intelligent Transportation System Projects. This is fiber optics and cameras for the different intersections. And then the final one are the miscellaneous street projects. Okay, a little bit of history, if I could, on the street program. I think most of you were around for the Mesa Transportation Plan development. That was adopted by council in June of 2002. About a two-year process. We started back in around 2000. And the idea behind the Mesa Transportation Plan was to look out into the future at our vision for build-out and what our needs would be over the next 25 years. The other thing we accomplished in doing that was we were anticipating that there would be a regional election in a couple of years. We also wanted to study to determine what our needs would be so that we would have projects that would best serve the city when it came time for the development of the regional transportation plan. And in terms of the regional transportation plan, a little background, the half-cent countywide sales tax, as you all know, was passed in November of 2004. Not all of the projects that were included in the Mesa Transportation Plan were included and funded in the regional plan. There was just too many projects to be funded by the region, and so there's a good number of projects that are not included in that plan, and so as we move forward over time, there are additional needs, transportation needs, that are not funded by the region. Another thing that's really important to know is that the projects that are scheduled in the regional transportation were scheduled in many cases to meet MAG's cash flow needs and when the money was available, not necessarily to meet our needs as a local community and when those projects needed to be built. And so that's required us to reshuffle a number of those projects, moving a number of them forward, because most of the projects got scheduled in the latter 5 years of the program. In fact, almost half of the projects were scheduled then. The other thing to note is that the projects are based on 2025 traffic volumes and traffic projections, really, based on the Mesa Transportation Plan. The final item is that when the plan was developed, the idea was that there would be a 30% local match for these regional transportation plan arterial street projects. Well, as it's turning out, the reality of it is that the local jurisdiction, Mesa in this case, will really pay for the majority of the cost for these projects. It will well exceed the probably 50% for most of these projects, and that has to do with the fact that the project estimated costs were too low, and they're only inflated with the CPI, and that really doesn't measure up against what we're seeing in terms of material cost increases and things of that nature.
Jeff, let's make that clear, that the cost to the region is fixed.
Right.
Ours goes up. So how right. much they contribute is fixed, and it was tied to the CPI.
Yeah, the Consumer Price Index.
Which has absolutely nothing to do with the cost of construction of a street.
Absolutely.
So just want to make it clear that this wasn't our staff. You folks did a good job of estimating that. That wasn't the issue. Right. Yes, Councilmember Rawls has a question.
Can I just one question on that? And I'm just looking at item number 27 on your list. We're accelerating Val Vista Drive Southern to University for a cost of $6.6 million. But the reimbursement from MAG beyond the five-year period is $7.7 million. Do we get the 7.7 even though the project only cost us 6.6?
Which line item are you on?
Number 27 on the first page of the...
You know, Councilman Rawls, that number doesn't look right.
I'll probably step in here. I think
okay,
what you've done on some of it, they've mixed and matched some of the reimbursements to different projects. But what you're seeing is the future value of reimbursement against present value of cost on doing the project in the fiscal year we're planning in this five-year window.
Okay.
So you do start to see, based on which projects' monies were matched with which projects,
right.
when they're going to be coming in.
Okay. Well,
we will get that full $7 million, but it'll be outside our five-year window.
Right. And I think that the reason I raised it here is I think it's another element of what we just discussed, which is these projects are going to take a lot more local money because of construction cost increases, because of acceleration, whatever it is that we're doing. And I mean, the numbers just aren't going to line up with that nice, neat model that was presented to the voters for the Prop 400 a couple of years ago, because it just exactly. doesn't work.
And Vice Mayor, Councilman Rawls, and that's a very good point. And part of what we're also trying to do, and the ones we've chosen to accelerate, we can bring that back to the council to show you, we showed you before, is we actually believe it saves money.
Right.
And that's what you're talking about.
This example looks to me like it's a
some
great
of these
state,
are,
you know.
So far out into the future that the way they were inflated,
value.
But
right.
by doing them earlier, we actually our little maximum is we maximize the city's match
right.
against the project, because now our match actually will represent a greater portion of the cost in the next 5 years versus 10 or years or more out. So that's thank you. That's exactly that's what we're
I
trying to accomplish.
The point I just
here.
Wanted to make it was two elements, not just the one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'd like to talk a little bit about the local transportation funding. And as you all know, in 2006, the voters approved a half-cent sales tax increase. A portion of that is dedicated for transportation funding. It amounts to three-tenths of a cent that funds transportation, and it was dedicated primarily for maintenance and operations. I think it's really important to remember that, because as maintenance and operation costs continue to increase, this eats up the vast majority of that additional sales tax dollar.
And let's stipulate, that was for streets. When we say transportation,
exactly.
people start thinking everything, buses,
right.
light rail, all of those things, that's excluded.
Right. We were very specific that it only can be spent for street purposes. The other issue is the issue of limited funds for the local share of RTP projects. And then the final issue is construction costs escalated well above the overall inflation rate, which is what we were just talking about, and the fact that particularly material costs have really gone up tremendously in the last couple of years and will probably continue to do so. In terms of the RTP projects, another thing that we did a few years ago is, knowing that we were going to have a real challenge here with trying to meet our local match requirements, we took a look at whether or not it would make sense to do full mile corridor street widening, or whether we should really focus on intersection improvements. And we studied McKellops and Southern Avenue to take a look very specifically, and we modeled those two roads to look at what would make the most sense in terms of improvements. And what we found was that we could get 80% of the benefit for half of the cost if we simply focused on doing the intersections. And so for the vast majority of the projects that are in the plan now, we've shifted from doing the full corridor widening to just focusing on doing intersection improvements. Now, that includes tapering to allow traffic to move back and forth to go through the intersection. But that saves us quite a bit of money. As I said, it gives us about 80% of the benefit at roughly half the cost. It also has quite a bit less of an impact on the community because the focus is on widening at the intersection, and it doesn't have anywhere near the impact, particularly on the residential homes.
Jeff, there is, and this might be the time for me to mention this, but there is another impact, and that is that this city was not ever designed as a very walking-friendly city. I mean, we have very, very wide streets. And so as you widen those intersections, it becomes even more difficult for people to cross the street, and it tends to isolate blocks of people. So I think we also have to carry in our mind the potential for certain streets being widened like this, but not looking at every intersection on every arterial widen, because what we've done then is we have really turned this into a pedestrian-unfriendly community. So, you know, Southern and McKellips are great examples of regional carriers streets that you know, can use those kinds of improvements. I don't think we're going to really see those as major pedestrian places.
Right.
Although if you think about the area around the Fiesta Mall, Banner Desert, those areas, there are some, an MCC campus, we're going to have to do some thinking on that one too. If there are other places mid-block where somebody can push a button and cross the street in a place where it's narrower, I think we're going to have to look at that as well. Council Member Griswold.
Yeah, I wanted to commend you that getting 80% of the value for 50% of the cost, I think, is a smart way to do business. You've also not taken on ones that are just incredibly expensive but needed. Southern and Power, you can't turn right into the superstition. It's backed up for nearly a quarter of a mile every day. But you'd have to take out part of Leisure World Corner and their houses to be able to fix it. You didn't even deal with that. You said, I'll spend the money in other places, widening intersections, and this one will have to go, and hopefully people use the new 202 freeway and stay at that intersection as much as possible. So it looks like a very wise expenditure of public money.
Thank you,
Council Member. And the other, I guess the other thing to know is that as we move forward, there'll be a number of public meetings to talk about these projects, and the reason we're here today is to get the council's input. There may be projects on here that you may want to give us some input on as to whether we want to maybe do them differently or not do them at all. To finish up on some of the earlier thoughts, the council did concur with focusing on intersection improvements for the vast majority of projects. Really, the projects where we're not doing that really tend to be the projects that are very close to a freeway, and it makes more sense to go ahead and do the half-mile full corridor widening in order to meet up with the freeway, for example, on Mesa Drive from Southern down to the US 60. And again, this stretches our limited dollars that we have for the local match much farther. And then the next is a map of the different regional transportation plan projects that are scattered throughout the city. And you can see it here on the map. We've also got this, it shows by the different council districts where these projects are located. Located all over the city, there's 29 RTP projects, and then we also have two other projects. One of the projects is located down at the ASU Poly campus, and that's the loop road down there. Then we've also added another project at council's suggestion, Broadway Road, as you can see there in red. And I'm going to hand this off now to Dan Clevenger.
Sure. Thanks, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to mention some of the typical elements you'll find in these RTP projects. In a lot of cases at these intersections, we only have two through lanes, so an added third through lane is pretty typical. Also, many locations, we only have a single left turn lane. The widening would allow us to provide a second left turn lane that takes better advantage of the traffic signal timing. One thing we've tried to do, Vice Mayor, these right turn lanes, that's the next item on there. In the past, we've just kind of included three through lanes, dual lefts, right turn lanes. Again, that's not very pedestrian friendly. We're just widening the intersection more. We think it's less critical when we have three through lanes, that curb lane, like Councilmember Griswold mentioned on Power Road, southbound Southern. When there's three lanes, it can be utilized for the shared through and right turn movement. When you only have two lanes, sometimes the right turn lane becomes a little more critical. So we're trying now to look at that, not just blanketly add that into the project. So we're trying to be more pedestrian friendly. In addition, we would add bus bays where appropriate.
These projects also include ITS elements, fiber and devices, cameras, and detection. And, of course, there's also some utility improvements in those projects. We mentioned earlier the accelerated projects and how that works. These are some of the reasons some of these RTP projects were accelerated. It could be for traffic congestion or safety reasons. As part of the Mesa Transportation Plan, there was an assessment done in 2002 to identify the current level of service of most of the intersections you see in the RTP, and they're assigned a grade A through F. It's what we call level of service, and the ones that are E and F are near breakdown or very congested. So we try to consider those. Economic development, of course, we've got a lot of opportunity for that in the Southeast Mesa, and the rapid development just occurring near the airport. And then also, Jeff mentioned earlier, the clustering in the last phase of the RTP, we had nearly half of our projects in that in the last 5 years, and we couldn't very well do that. So some of those were brought forward. These are the 10 accelerated projects. They should be marked with an asterisk on your list there that you have before you. And I think Chuck was going to go over an example to show you how that it works out financially.
Okay. To demonstrate exactly what we were talking about to really start this presentation, we took the Hawes Road Santan Freeway to Ray Road, and we did this back in February to just give you a quick example. And we took all the design or the phase components in the fiscal year they were supposed to be worked in, and we took the payment of the reimbursement date, which this one falls outside of our five-year window. So we're looking at a future value of the RTP reimbursement of almost $3.4 million. So the total phased cost of the project in the dollars in the year it's planned to be done in 2009-2010 requires us to bond, if we're going to go forward with this, $3.7 million in cost. So I have projected out, you know, just a quick study of if we use the inflation rates built into the system to 2021 when we get the reimbursement, if we did the project then, the project cost would almost be $3.7 million, a little over $3.7 million. So if we finance on the acceleration plan almost 3.8 for the 12 years at 5.5%, our financing cost is $5.2 million in total for about $436,000 a year. So that gives us total financing cost of $1.8 million. If you take from the difference in our estimated increase in the project cost over the inflated amount, we have saved $1.1 million on this project alone. So this is where we're trying to maximize that match.
Now, so when you said the total financing cost, you mean the total cost including the financing?
Yes.
Yeah. By the way, all of us up here except for this young gentleman to my far right are thinking this is an eye chart you've just given us. And we've all failed. You know that F you were talking about before?
That's why I brought it up here on the Elmo.
Well, the problem is that with the Elmo, it's just as bad. Council Member Griswold.
One, you've used 5.5%. What's our bond rating now? We're getting it to 4?
It was the last one, probably 4.75.
Yeah. So you've taken a conservative, which is good. We might get pleasantly surprised if we issue in the next year or so. The other is you didn't take the people happiness factor in there where people get to use these for 10 years faster than they would rather than being stuck in traffic every day in the middle of the summer with no air conditioning, some people, for 10 years.
We have enough challenges just presenting this. So.
You don't want the happiness factor in there. Okay, well, good.
Councilman Griswold, it's...
I saw it.
Actually, this is a project that probably you could add economic development opportunities that will open up as a result. Think of this is Hawesville Road coming down into Ray, which then connects to Ellsworth, which goes, in theory, very close to where the new terminal building would be at the airport. So other than just the capital financing savings, there is the opportunity. One reason we want to accelerate this project, too, is it's going to open up a tremendous amount of property that could be then ultimately developed out, too. So it pays back in many other ways, too.
Thank you.
And I was just informed the last page of your presentation is the non-eye chart version.
Oh, sorry.
In,
Brian, who also worries about eye charts.
It's in this thick packet on the...
Thank you for being concerned for our eyes. We appreciate it. All right. Councilmember Whalen.
Just a question on this specific project, economic development, Chris. Do we anticipate that the construction of Haas may open up the sale of the Haas property to the north then for future residential or whatever the case may be?
I think it has, yes. I mean, that would be certainly another benefit because now all that property that currently is north of the 202 there now has direct access down into the airport, Bray Road, Ellsworth. So, yeah, I think those properties become more
that's
valuable.
That's still a functioning dairy, I believe.
Oh, yes. I could smell it.
They were there first. Just remember that. All right.
I don't smell it anymore, but unfortunately.
All right.
And Vice Mayor, you can see that we've got the area that we were just talking about up here on Elmo. You can see Haas Road, and the other project that was advanced is Ray Road, and there's quite a bit of activity going on in that entire area. The other thing, just as a note, we are also looking preliminarily at the possibility of trying to advance the Williams Gateway Freeway by 4 or 5 years. We've done 3 or 4 of these projects in the past, so we've developed a preliminary cash flow. We've met with MAG, and we're going to meet with ADOT next to see if we can't advance this. And really, there's two, I think, very excellent reasons to do that. One would be the economic development opportunity, and the other is to deal with the really statewide problem of regional traffic in that area that's coming out of Pinal County.
We hadn't noticed.
Yes.
I did.
Did you?
I've been there 14 years. I was going to ask you about that at the end, but since you beat me to the punch, I'm curious as to how we would be able to use this money. We can't actually build a freeway, so what would we use the money for? Would you purchasing property advance or studies, or how would that money be spent?
Well, the idea would be to advance the money that's currently in the ADOT program. Currently, they're looking at building this project in the year 2016. They would start with design and right-of-way acquisition in 2012, 2013. What we're looking at is trying to advance it 4 or 5 years, and so we would do all of those activities 4 or 5 years sooner. We'd start design as soon as they're through with the environmental document that they're going to start here in the next 2 or 3 months, and then right-of-way acquisition. What we're really looking at, I would imagine, would be advancement of the first mile. The total cost of the project right now is estimated around $310 million. The first mile is about $153 million. And so the thought is to get that first mile, get the interchange there with the 202 at the Santan completed and get it to Ellsworth. And we think that would be might open up some opportunities to maybe work with the developers in the area and property owners in the area to help us also advance the remainder of the Williams Gateway Freeway. One of the things that ADOT's experiencing in that area right now is a tremendous amount of escalation in land costs. That property is changing hands like you wouldn't believe, and every time it does, the cost goes up. So if we're able to do some of this work earlier, it's going to save the state quite a bit of money.
Well, there's a lot of benefits to this as well. We've seen a couple of cases come through to this council where the landowners have wanted to zone or to put down a site plan, which immediately increases the cost.
Right.
Well, we don't want to do that because it increases the cost to the taxpayer. And on the other hand, though, it's not really fair for us. How is that not a takings issue? Because we refuse to do a site plan, so you can't use your land to your best value. So, but if we're able to put some money together to accelerate this, it's going to reduce the cost to taxpayers, particularly in Mesa. It's going to have some financial benefits to us. It's going to make earlier connection to Williams Gateway. This east side is where the new terminal will eventually go, so we'll be able to accelerate a few other projects as well. I'd like that idea a lot.
I think the other issue is that the first mile is pretty fixed. I mean, we know where that first mile is going to be. We have all the environmental requirements from the federal government for the additional miles and out into Pinal County, and I can't remember, Jeff, you told me, but I don't remember how far out. It's the natural terminus or the indicated terminus, or there's some term for that.
Right. The federal highways requires that we study it all the way to the logical terminus of the freeway corridor. So in this case, that would be wherever they decide to terminate it, probably at US 60 in Pinal County, probably, I don't know what the exact distance it would be, but it would be well east of Gold Canyon, the Gold Canyon area, where it would probably hook up.
And you know, just to make note, I don't know how many people know this, but MAG and the state of Arizona probably need to give Jeff some kind of an award, because Jeff is the one who invented this process of how we could, the grant anticipation notes and the, was it HPANs, Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
That Jeff came up with like in 2000 or 2001 that accelerated our other freeways. And the reason we're talking about all of this is because he went and did all the work to do this. I don't know if we recognize folks enough for good work, but good work on that, Jeff. That really helped us. Okay, keep on going.
I can't take all the credit for that. A lot of folks worked on that, including Larry Wolf. But anyway, I appreciate that.
Yeah, but he's gone and you're here.
That's true.
That's what happens when you retire. Somebody else gets the credit.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor, I'll continue on with the RTP project priorities. We were asked to try to, not necessarily rank, but group these projects in priority fashion, I guess. The first two elements we looked at, and we put these projects at the top of the chart, were the high growth areas that we talked about in Southeast Mesa, and those projects that had IGAs or we have partnerships with other agencies. The next level we looked at, again, was the congestion I mentioned. We looked at those 2002 levels of service, and then we did a reality check on it, looking at today's traffic volumes, just so that we could kind of rank these groups. We looked at crash history. That's important. The types of crashes we looked at were rear-end crashes and left-turn crashes. Those are both indicators of congestion, and those are the types of crashes we were trying to prevent with these improvements in some cases. Also, we looked at those projects that would be reimbursed within the first 5 years, and then we looked at projects where we've already spent some money on design or these projects are already completely designed. So if you look in the first group here, these are the ones at the top of your chart of the 29 projects. These are all Southeast Mesa. They're around the airport area. All five projects are have high growth and economic development opportunities. The next logical group we broke up have congestion and safety issues today, and they're in design, and also all of them are reimbursed within 5 years. This third group has congestion and safety issues. They're in design or reimbursed within 5 years, one or the other, not both. The next group after that, in priority order, have congestion and or safety issues. And there's four there. Next group are just projects that have are reimbursed within 5 years. And I'd like to point out, this doesn't mean that there's not merits to doing these projects. They just don't have the congestion or safety problems that some of the others do at this point. Jeff mentioned earlier that these were fit into the program, not necessarily based on our needs, but they were fit into certain phases. And the last one was what I just called other RTP projects. Again, we had Lindsay of Brown, Bell Vista Country Club of Brown, and Thomas. Thomas is an example of a street that doesn't exist today. What we'll go over next is what we call the non-RTP projects. It's your list of, what do we have, 17? Alan, 17 CIP projects, and Alan Sanderson will run through those if there's no questions immediately on what I've talked about.
The first category is city share. Developers have to build the arterial streets adjacent to their development up to 24 feet of the street width. Anything the city needs beyond that, per city code, the city participates in the extra width cost for that pavement and sometimes streetlights. That involves, in addition to the pavement, streetlights, it involves modified traffic signals. There's also a city share program for utilities for oversized utility lines, which is funded out of the utility program. Over the last 10 years in the streets program, the city share streets amount has really had a wide range from about $4.1 million to $0.3 million a year over a 10-year period. The next category is ITS projects, and all of these projects were in the ITS deployment plan that the TIC committee saw recently. It's things like fiber optic communications, end communication devices so that our traffic signals can be moved from the old control system onto the new control system, additional detection,
cameras to monitor traffic and message signs in some places. There are four other projects we want to talk about in a little bit more detail. The first is the ASU Polytechnic Ring Road. You can go on. It's about a 2-mile loop.
Excuse
around.
Excuse me, Alan. I'm sorry. Councilmember Summers.
I'm just going to have to ask Debbie. I'm going to have to declare a conflict on the ring road. Since this is part of the package, I can discuss the package to stay out of that particular section.
Yes, and I'm not sure, you know, I guess I'd like to talk to you more. I'm not sure that building a road would fall within a conflict of interest because you work for ASU Polytechnic. I think there are many. This is more a general policy discussion and general benefit to the city of Mesa as opposed to a benefit to ASU Polytechnic. They may be one of the beneficiaries, but they're certainly not the only beneficiary.
Okay, I'll talk to you on that. This is just a briefing, so I don't think it's going to be any issue then.
So again, that's a main ring road around the campus to serve the campus. Curb, gutter, sidewalk, bike lanes, the usual major street type improvements. Total project about $14 million, and that includes about $6 million of stormwater improvements along with that project. The other one is Broadway Road between Sossaman and Hawes, which was built many years ago in the county when the middle of the road served as a drainage system, and anyone who's been lucky enough to be out there during a heavy rainstorm knows if you had a boat, you could go faster down the middle than we go in the cars along the curb. So this would create install a storm drain system here, put a normal crown so the water will drain off of the road instead of filling up the road. That's one of the few that we have left that way. University used to be that way in many sections. That's about a $15 million project. Thomas Road median is between Recker and Power back when Red Mountain Ranch and those subdivisions were built many years ago.
Landing strip?
Yes. The plan at that time called for all arterial streets to be 6 lanes. Some of us kind of argued this one didn't need to be 6 lanes, but the decision was made to stick with the plan. And in a conversation with the neighborhood out there several years ago now, a project was developed that would build a wide raised landscape median to get rid of some of that pavement, excess pavement that's out there now. It's about a $900,000 project. We also have arterial and residential street reconstruction projects, and there are a couple of different aspects. One is just the normal rebuilding of streets as the pavement wears out, arterial collector streets as well as intersections. The other is arising from what Jeff talked about earlier, where on our major street projects, we've gone from continuous street widening to just intersection improvements. The result of that is we have sections in between the major intersections which now aren't part of those projects, so they aren't going to be reconstructed as part of those projects that were originally conceived as complete continuous street widening, so that creates the need for more arterial reconstruction money to take care of those segments in between the intersection improvements. And the last one we want to talk about is actually a non-bondable project. It's Baseline Road between Sunnyvale and the RWCD Canal. East of Country Club, portions of Baseline along our border with Gilbert, some portions are in Mesa, some are in Gilbert. Gilbert's participated in improving the section that's in Mesa. Mesa's participated in improving the section that's in Gilbert, and this is another section that's in Gilbert for improvement. And the reason it's not bondable is for the city is the city's not going to own the facility. So that's the extent of my legal knowledge about bonding, but since it's actually a town of Gilbert facility, Mesa cannot use Mesa bond money.
Okay, well, let me ask a question then. Gilbert could bond for this, and we could help pay the debt service to Gilbert, but I assume that if we get back to our previous discussion, that would then just get into the area of a cash payment and would no longer, because it's not our bond, it would not fall outside of the exclusion. And Chuck is nodding his head yes.
Yeah, Vice Mayor, as I understand it, in the recent arrangements or past with Gilbert, we've, on some of the border streets, we've made arrangements where one city or the other would be responsible for a certain length to construct or rebuild, whatever, widen, and then be responsible for the maintenance or whatever. What we probably need to do is go back to Gilbert and see if we can swap out a portion of a project that they were going to do that was in Mesa and that we can do in Gilbert, and just trying to find an equivalent exchange. It's just that this project popped out when we were going through trying to identify those that needed some CIP bonding, and then realizing this was not ultimately going to remain in our jurisdiction, that that would not be eligible. So we still need to work through this. Ultimately, I think the comment to the council is, if we are not able to work out an arrangement, or if we can't find that trade-off with Gilbert, what it means is that the dollars from sales tax that we have already planned, this would then be paid for with cash from that. I mean, we can still do the project. Our preference, we think, would be better is to try to find a project we can exchange with Gilbert, so we can do a project in Mesa that's bondable. But we just kind of give you a heads up to the possibility.
Okay, thank you.
And with that, we'll be glad to answer any other questions you may have.
You've given us a list that we all had of wherever I put it, of capital improvement projects for transportation, and I know at least one on there is of concern to me, and that's Country Club and University. There are still a number of concerns about that, and I'm concerned about that widening and what that does on the northeast corner. I think we haven't really addressed what it does to that property. Did I say northeast? If I said northwest, I said the wrong corner. Okay, northeast corner of property. Also some issues in terms of that area having historic walkable things. It's close to town center. The neighborhoods there have some historic neighborhoods close by. They're concerned about walkability, and I'm concerned about that. I don't want to eliminate it from the list. I just want to move it down on the list. I don't know what kind of concurrence I need from the council, but I know that there are still a lot of neighborhood concerns on that.
And Vice Mayor, it's exactly from the council, and maybe later as we go out into the communities and talk about this project, that's the kind of feedback we get. If there are projects out there that at one point maybe met certain criteria of congestion, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to go in and do the same formula we've always used. That's the feedback we need. And certainly we've tried to identify to the council, certainly there's a lot of other projects out there. We've tried to give a sense of projects that we feel are worthy of consideration that need to be done in the next 5 years, either driven by the RTP or otherwise. But certainly, if there are projects on here that we feel like could be delayed, maybe we need to rethink them, this is the time to do it, because there's this is what we want to do now, start scrubbing this list down as we move forward. So certainly, if that's a project we're aware of that there's been a lot of discussion about, and if we need to pull back, we certainly can do that.
And I think that there's some others that we may want to move up, you know, the ASU Ring Road, and you've got that on the list.
It's on the list. And so really, there, I don't want to consider that we're trying to draw a line here. We were just trying to give the council a sense of grouping and why they're on the list more than anything else. Now, certainly, as you look at it, there are maybe some that, from a priority standpoint, maybe don't stand out as much. But again, that's a decision that we're going to have to make when we start talking about the cost impact. And how much do we, you know, what is that threshold? And some of these projects may have to be delayed.
And some of that we're going to have to look at when we put this forward for our bond election. We're going to have to look at how you cash flow that to keep that bond.
And we've, that actually, that's been done in here, and we can actually bring that forward. And because each one of the total project costs have assumed, and as you go into the further into the back of the that packet, mm-hmm. it'll show you the assumed project timeline, and you'll see that they're staggered out. And so we've tried to create that perspective of issuing bonds and trying to keep that fairly constant over time and meeting our cash flow needs.
And like we said, there may be some that you might want to swap out as we discuss.
And that's fine.
Councilmember Rawls.
I just want to make sure that what we're talking about today is a presentation of what you guys have put together. We're not voting on approving these,
we're not
prioritizing or anything like that today. You know, Claudia, for 20 years, University and Country Club has been my least favorite intersection in this entire city. So I appreciate what you're saying, but I also think something needs to be done. Now, maybe there's a way to do it so it doesn't have the kind of impact on the neighborhood that you're talking about. But yeah, I'd like time, as I'm going to do with the police ones, to go through them and think about them and drive them and see what's there. So sure. I appreciate the heads up.
Councilmember Griswold.
Yeah, as I remember, on the northeast corner of Country Club University is a tattoo parlor, check cashing, 1970s old building, etc. But you know, everything you've got to consider what we're doing on there. I would like to have this, you know, just the day before. Reading through this is pretty tough when it's flopped on your lap 15 minutes before a meeting. You know, we get a packet sent out, so it'd be really nice to have this a day or two before to be able to look through and ask telling questions. I like the way you laid it out. I like the way you put priorities on there. That makes it a lot easier. And then you can discuss, because some people live in neighborhoods, know them a lot better than other people. So that's, I respect people who live in an area and know pedestrian paths and et cetera, mm-hmm. what people use it for. So, all right, thank you.
And let me address the northeast corner of, I should have clarified that. The northeast corner of Country Club and University was not designated in the plan for a total take. And so the parking lot there is already difficult to maneuver. And so if you then take more of that parking lot, you have then, in my mind, made for even less desirable uses, and I'll just leave it at that. Councilmember Summers.
I would, I keep looking at all these projects, and they all need to get done. To what level, I don't know what the priorities are. I'm going to have to drive it as well. But every time I look at least my district, I think there's more I need to add. And I got to be careful not to do that. But one I think we really need to add is the freeway extension. So we're going to have to get an addendum to this to get an idea of how much money your office is thinking about and what that's going to cost us as well. And then I'd like to see this packaged up. I'd actually like to do a little road show in my district and take this bond with the fire and the police bonds that we're looking at and see if get some public input on this. So if we can talk about putting something like that together for my area, because there's a lot of this is in my area.
And we'd be happy to do that. And in the next few months, we'll be able to flesh out better what those costs are going to be for the freeway advancement. We do have a couple things going for us, though. There's some of that stand money that's available, the State Transportation Acceleration Needs Fund. We got about $20 million for the Williams Gateway Freeway, so we can apply that to pay for the interest expense. So that will offset quite a bit of that cost. But we'll be happy to come out and talk with your group about that. The other thing is on in terms of University and Country Club, one of the things we're working with MAG on is to try to make it a little bit more easy for us to move the reimbursement monies from one project to another. So if it's determined that we don't want to do a particular project in this package, we can move the reimbursement to another project, because we have other projects where the MAG reimbursement is ridiculously low. A good example of that would be Gilberton University. It's about a $16 million project. MAG reimbursement's around $3 million. And there's about $3.5 million at Gilberton University, or at Country Club and University. And so if it's determined that we don't want to do that project, we can move that money to the other project.
Well, and
that reimbursement.
I'm not determining that we don't want to do it.
Right.
I'm determining from my perspective that we need to have a little more conversation on
okay.
it. Some things have come up in the last couple of months that hadn't been discussed previously.
Right.
So I just feel like we need a little more time on it. In terms of Scott, your suggestion, I actually think that I know you were just talking about your area, but I like that suggestion for the council. For anybody on the council who would like to go on a road show to look at the roads, I think that would be a good thing for us to be able to do, Chris, for all of these projects
right.
that are on the list.
Vice Mayor, I think that's item number 4 on our agenda.
I was going to call mine Scott Summers
item
Flying
Circus. Item number 4, which is to discuss, provide direction on citizen involvement. I was thinking of council involvement.
Oh, sorry.
No. This was for the council.
Okay.
I agree with item number 4. As a matter of fact, we already have a motion and a second.
Okay, I'm with you now.
Councilmember Whalen.
Jeff, question on stand money. Does that have to be MAG approved to use those for reimbursement for buying down financing?
Councilmember Whalen, yes, it would. We wouldn't need to go to MAG to get that approval, but I think that MAG would be, and I think we'd probably have to get ADOT's approval as well, but if we put together a scenario that would allow us to do that project sooner, it would save the state quite a bit of money. And, you know, MAG, just like everyone else, MAG is struggling with their capital costs increasing just like ours. So they've seen some of their freeway project costs almost double. And so they would, I'm sure, would be more than happy to approve or strongly consider what we're proposing to do. We've talked to the MAG staff about it, about using it for interest expense instead of just using it to directly acquire properties. And they're, I think they're pretty supportive of the idea.
And that wouldn't impact the latest struggle with the West Side on using those monies to buy down interest?
Councilmember Whalen, a group has been appointed of city managers to take a look at that policy. Chris Brady, the city manager, is going to serve on that. I think that they're going to come up with a way to address that whole policy issue that's going to be a reasonable and fair way that's going to treat everyone fairly. You know, we've got a situation where we paid for a much greater share of the interest expense when we did our freeway accelerations than they did on the West Side here recently. But I think, and I think that's one of the reasons why they want to take a look at the policy and come up with a way that's a little bit more consistent from one freeway advancement to another. So right now, it's really dependent upon the inflation factor that's in play at that particular time.
Yeah, that whole issue was misrepresented badly to the community also. It just looks like that only one side got told.
Yeah. Okay. Was there interest on the part of other council members besides me and Councilmember Summers to for the potential of a road show, so to speak?
And this is a real, literally going on the road with the council.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Going on the road, looking at the roads prior to our at some point in time here, we are going to have a vote on these items, and we're going to vote on what we may or may not be putting on the ballot for bond projects. So I know I'm interested in that. Is there any other interest in that? Yeah.
Over 160,000 miles on my truck. I've been through most of them.
Come on, Mark.
All right. Well, perhaps perhaps if you could work on that, I'd appreciate it.
It'll literally be a roadshow.
Yeah. Thank you. Councilmember Crispin.
May I make a suggestion? You do it on a rainy day out on the east side and see if you have pontoons on there.
On Broadway Road.
And frankly, anyone who is contemplating running for the city council might want to be invited to come along on that trip, because I just looked out in the audience and saw Mr. Finter, who I believe has pulled papers to run, and I thought, you know, that might be a trip that he would be interested in as well.
We can extend the invitation.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Is there anything else that we need here? This was not scheduled for any direction. It was just potential capital projects. So now we're on to item number four, unless you had something else for us. All right. That was item three. Item four is to discuss and provide direction on citizen involvement and education relating to police, fire, and transportation capital project plans.
I move we have some.
I have a motion and a second. Mr. Brady, would you like to tell us what it is we're voting for today?
Well, now that you've already voted, can you be against that, huh? No, actually, Vice Mayor, the mayor had asked us to put an item on this because we talked about the question that we were in the discussion was, after having the conversation now with about the public safety projects and the street projects, is the question, then where do we go from here? And part of that, maybe it'd be better to wait till he's here, because he's the one that asked kind of what would be the direction of moving forward, that outreach to talk about the projects, not only for the council, as you suggested, needs to get familiar with the projects, but then how do we talk about it as a community, and making sure before we really even were to call the election and establish, like you said, vote on or choose the list of projects going forward, just kind of get a discussion from the council about how you would imagine that taking place. We've thought about the opportunity, and that's why I got a little confused when we talked about the roadshow. We were thinking about also in the terms of going out into the community. You know, we've tried with some limited success doing the town hall meetings. What we were thinking about too, though, is maybe we could do some of those, maybe not do all six, every six, but do a few, but also going out to the different service clubs or other places where people already gather and maybe making presentations there. But at some point, I think it would be beneficial for us to get the information out and then maybe have some opportunities for the council to hear from the public how they feel about the projects and focus on the projects, because then we also, parallel to this, need to have a discussion about getting into the cost of the project. I mean, you have the cost, but how are they going to be paid for? What is the impact to the citizens if these are approved, and assuming we use a secondary property tax to pay back the bonds, what impact will that have? I want to be careful, too. If we we may be assuming that all these are the projects that we want to move forward, we could, you know, we could obviously easily run that number, but I also want to be careful that we don't start putting number lots and different iterations of numbers out there and people start wondering, is it this or is it that? Maybe, but the sooner the better, I suspect, in trying to get people settled on what the impact's going to be. The other question that we have to have a discussion with the council, we've already talked about the capital cost for streets. That O&M cost is built into the sales tax that we have for streets that we receive each year. But then we talked about last week about the impact or the capital cost for public safety projects. And we know that included in there were fire stations and some other facilities that I believe at the end of the day had about $8 million recurring O&M costs. And so we also need to have the discussion about how is that going to be paid for. So I just want to also hear from the council a little bit of just some direction of timing of how all those things you want to bring those forward. Because obviously from the staff perspective, we can go in any order, but I want to also the council just be thinking about those things. Maybe we could talk about this afternoon or this morning. We don't necessarily have to. I just want something to be, council start thinking about these, and we can certainly come back anytime. But
this is a little bit different sequence than we normally have. We usually have a bond committee that convenes. They then give recommendations to the council. The council votes and refers it to the ballot or doesn't. In this case, we had a bond committee that was convened, I think, about a year and a half ago. I may be off on my timing.
Probably more than that, because
Were you not here, Chris, at the time?
It was
okay,
so
it must be 2.5 years ago.
2004.
So we had the bond committee, and they made recommendations to the council. The council looked at them and felt that they were too broad for us to move forward with them. We wanted to pare them back. So we don't have that committee that normally would then go forward to help educate the community on this. We have gone out there, Chris, as you have noted, and had those neighborhood meetings. Frankly, most of us have had more success with our pancake breakfasts. You know, it's the if you feed them, they will come theory of life. And, you know, I've thought also if you included chocolate that more people would come, perhaps a brownie social. But I think, seriously, we have had more success with that. And even if we did things, you know, I'm willing to flip hamburgers or grill hot dogs or whatever it happens to be, because it attracts people when they have to feed their family anyway. You know, they're going to eat breakfast someplace or they're going to eat something for dinner anyway, and so it sometimes meshes in with what ends up being very busy schedules for people. I don't think it's that they don't care. I think it's that they're very busy. So maybe we can look at some of those kinds of things. Is there any other thought on this other than that we agree that education is a good thing, Mr. Rawls, Mr. Summers, Councilmember Griswold?
I agree with our city manager. I think talking to service clubs, they're already meeting, already care about the city. They do projects in the city, and they also talk to lots of people. So meeting with Rotary, Kiwanis, Optimus, Lions, I know I'm going to leave someone out, Mono Club, Saratoga. Those are the kind of things, I think, if you can have somebody who's a good speaker and doesn't put people to sleep and explains these, that would be probably a positive. And most of them are looking for speakers, so, and they're looking for information, and we don't always give them information. So I think that would be a good thing to do.
Mr. Whalen.
Probably fairly controversial, but I think it is time to take a look at similar proposals that the City of Phoenix and the City of Glendale just came back with, and that's sales tax increase for public safety. We have road public sales tax increases already in place, but we're at 1.75. I think the City of Phoenix just went to 2.1 or 2, and Glendale is now at 2.2.
I think Phoenix is at 2.2 as well.
Phoenix 2.2 also. So just, I mean, I'm not advocating it, but I think we need to know, would those O&M numbers be covered at what percentage?
Okay. Anything else on this? We have a motion and a second for doing something with this, but I think we don't really need a vote on it. I think what you have is some direction.
And it just continue as thoughts come up, we can keep talking about this.
And that's a good point. You know, we haven't had much discussion on it, but you can go to Mr. Brady and give him your suggestions on how we might be able to do this. I saw that Councilmember Summers had one that he just passed down to me. We'll leave that on the table. Off the record and on the table.
Yeah.
Item number 5, hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the proposed co-promotion special events process. We've all read this. We've heard the, and I apologize, Rhett. I'm going to ask if we can maybe quickly go through this, ask questions as opposed to your full presentation,
absolutely,
which I know you had everybody spending the last 3 days working on, no doubt, and wearing your nice clothes. And
oh, he has a tie on.
But, you know, make sure, don't focus on me. Focus on them. Get them on the camera. They're looking good there. But rather than spending
while we're looking at it, Rhett was actually inducted into the Prescott High School Hall of Fame.
Big time.
Last week.
Big time.
Basketball star, Rhett?
Yeah, center.
Wrestling, right?
We're going to start calling you Spud.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we go to council concerns on this? Rhett, why don't you just hit the highlights just really fast here?
Sure, I appreciate that, Vice Mayor Walters and council members. Vice Mayor mentioned, you've read the report. We've been before you on several occasions back in 2006. And so we have reconvened after last year's event, which was extremely successful. There were over 20,000 people that attended that event, in particular talking about Cinco de Mayo. And so what we are proposing is, as it's located in your report, is number one, to secure a qualified private partner to co-promote the Cinco de Mayo event through a competitive bid process. That competitive bid process has been outlined, and it will be based upon two major components, one being financial and the other being technical elements. And two, we're seeking your support with the current to continue the current practice of all other previously produced events by the city through that first-come, first-served basis. I think it's important to note, however, of the 9 previous city events, we're really down now to 7 because the Mesa Miniature Day Parade has gone away, as well as the Mesa Mary Main Street has gone away. So there are, aside from Cinco de Mayo, there are only 2 events that will take place in a park, and that is the Turkey Trot, which is housed out of the Red Mountain facility, Red Mountain Park, and then the powwow, Native American powwow, that takes place at Pioneer Park. So we really only have 3, with Cinco de Mayo, Turkey Trot, and the powwow taking place in parks. The rest of them take place in other facilities, such as the convention center or our city streets. So those are our 2 proposals that we'd like just to bring before you and let you discuss those, and we can answer questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Rawls.
Thank you. I've got to tell you what I think this co-promotion thing looks like. A year and a half ago, the council decided that we didn't have the money to co-sponsor or sponsor 9 community events. One of them has now become so successful that we want to get our hand in the pocket. And basically, this looks like a power grab or a money grab to me. If we do this, it's exactly what the man said upstairs at the meeting on Monday night that I took exception is, which is that our business is to make money for the city. I don't think we should be doing this. I mean, you've got a third of the points that are assessed for these people. It's basically how much money are you going to give the city for promoting this event. I think that's inappropriate. I think it's wrong. I think it's the wrong direction. And I'm not in favor of it at all.
The charge for services for this event, one of the concerns that came up last year, and I understand what Tom is saying, but one of the things that came up as a result of this was the wear and tear on our parks, the damage that was occurring, and the fact that we were basically not charging, figuring that in our charges when we ask people to use this. There's another direction to go, which is we more fully capture the cost of what it really is costing when you have 20,000 people, residents of our community, descending on a park, and rather than the benefit of that accruing to the citizens who paid for that park, who own that park, the benefit of that accruing to a private corporation, and only to that private corporation. So as I sat and thought about that, because I really did think about that, Tom, that's my concern, is that then the city is subsidizing for land that we own, on land that is, the citizens pay for and they have a right to benefit from. They are not the ones who are truly benefiting from it. They're benefiting by being able to be there to participate. But if we did not fully recover all of the costs and the damage and the wear and tear, and, you know, like when you get mileage reimbursement from the federal government, they just don't give you just what it costs for your gas. They recognize that there are a whole lot of costs, insurance and you know, vehicle maintenance and all of those things that go into calculating that. And I don't think that exactly happened in our calculations as we were looking at this last year. So I saw this as the potential for the citizens of Mesa winning and somebody who wants to promote it winning. And maybe we need to look at what those numbers look like. But I do recognize what you're saying, Tom, and not fully disagreeing with you. I know you would expect me to fully disagree with you, but go ahead.
I was just going to say one of my other concerns was on the second part of this, where you make the distinction between new activities coming forward who are going to have to pay park rental fees and old existing activities that aren't going to have to pay park rental fees. I'm uncomfortable with that kind of discrimination between old and new as well. So maybe what we need to do is look at what's the appropriate park rental or facility rental for any organization, as opposed to trying to get into a profit-sharing partnership, which is what I perceive the co-promotion to be.
And of course, these were city events. We started these, events. They were our events, and it's because of, I know not for everybody, but for me, it was because of budget purposes. And frankly, I was going to ask, from my perspective, if you could look at Mary Main Street as a co-promotional opportunity. It's one of those events that I still hear from people over and over again that they really miss that. Is there a way to charge for that, to bring people back and do that? I don't have quite the same perspective on this. I do think that one of the challenges that we've had, if you looked at the history that they gave us, it's that we didn't really give exactly very clear direction. At any point in time when this has been in front of us, it reminds me of when I was on the school board, and every year we changed the travel policy because there just wasn't anything that was a perfect policy on it. Other comments from other council members on this? Where are you? We need to give some direction here rather than leaving them hanging out to dry here. Councilmember Summers?
I think the way I'm leaning, I agree. I think both of you have points in this, but ultimately it comes down to whatever policy we decide, there has to be some equity in that. And if that means recovering costs for damage done, it doesn't matter if it's a new event or an old event, we should be recovering those costs to at least restore the parks to current condition or pre-event condition. I'm afraid if we get a little too detailed in here, we're going to end up with at least the appearance that it's not an even playing field. And I understand that some of these events were city events at one time, but they were cut out of the budget for the reason that we just didn't have the budget for them. So at this point, I'm looking more for an even playing field for everybody involved.
Councilmember Griswold.
I think this was sparked by two entities, both qualified, that came forth and wanted to put on Cinco de Mayo in our park. And who do we choose? You choose the one you like, or your friend, or, and looking at some kind of fair way that you can have some kind of matrix and say, anybody who wants to put on one of our events, this is the matrix you go through, and this is how we choose, rather than choosing the one that has been in the city the longest, or you like the best, or whatever. And I don't envy your job, because you have to come up with something that's fair and also quantitative, which sort of fights each other.
I believe in full cost recovery. That's the only guidelines I'll give you. And one thing we found with some of the private groups, though, the advantage of a private group, is people will donate to a private group. They will donate, whether it's food or water or whatever, where they don't donate to the city. So I think there's a good first attempt. Maybe something better can come out of it. I don't want to really be co-sponsors, whatever. I'd like somebody to do it, have their own liability insurance, give us full cost recovery, and that we bless the event if it's a good event and make sure they have right security and fencing and whatever they do, and that people behave themselves or they lose their license the next time. So that would be sort of my guidelines.
Councilmember Whalen.
I like the fee-based direction, and I also like the idea of Mary Main Street coming back on a fee-based direction. What does it cost to shut down the park? What is the cost of the loss of use for the citizens? We have to have city staff monitor the event. We have electrical costs. We have all those costs. I think there should be a charge that the city should be paid for that. You know, is there a percentage of the advertising revenues or the whatever that needs to come back to the city for those reasons? Rather than being a co-sponsor, I think we can develop a fee base. There may be other locations throughout the city. The city of Tempe has an art festival that goes on and on and on, and they make considerable dollars, I believe, from that art festival for closing down the parks and closing down, you know, Tempe Beach Park or whatever the case they do. I think that's the way I'd like to proceed.
I think we have a problem today because we're missing two council members, and I'm not hearing us getting to a place of four votes. So my suggestion is that we bring this back at a point in time, and I think Councilmember Jones is gone next Thursday. So I think we're looking at 2 weeks before you can bring this back. Are you okay with holding off for 2 weeks before you get some direction on this?
Sure, and if I could just add one piece of background that has occurred in the last, that has been building probably for the last couple of years as it pertains to Cinco de Mayo. You know, that event was started 18 years ago for a different purpose, and that purpose was community education and to be, again, a community event. It is now a fenced-off facility. They bring in fencing. There is emissions to that event. It is a commercial event. When we look at those types of events, and from my experience in having done this for many years, every event is different. And when we're talking about the Veterans Day Parade, that is a community event, a free event, it is entirely different than an event with 24,000 people converging on one location that are drinking alcohol and food and beverage and traffic and parking and everything else. And so I don't know if, you know, one size fits all, and I think what we were trying to do here is to look at this particular event and see what would be best. If that is how that event will be in the future, what is the best mode of operation to manage that? Because to treat it as though somebody has rented the park and to walk away from it, we simply cannot do anymore. We need to be involved in that from the planning, from the start of it to the finish of it. And so that's why we're looking at that a little differently. But so I do appreciate the comments here, and we can certainly come back at a later time. If we do go this route, it is a little time sensitive because of the fact that we would have to go to an RFP and award a contract and develop that and have this promoter on board.
And I'm sorry, I just don't think we can give you, I'm not hearing four people today getting on the same page on this, but I think the other piece of this that I'm thinking is if this were being held at the amphitheater, I wonder if we'd even be having this conversation. It's a little bit different event, as Rhett just outlined. Councilmember Ross.
But it is a hybrid. But it, as you described, it is a commercial event now. And I have no problem sitting down with a person who wants to put on a commercial event like Cinco de Mayo and say, you will provide liability insurance, property damage insurance sufficient to restore the park to its pre-event stage. You will pay X amount for our involvement in terms of planning and staff. You will pay this, you will pay that. But to, in light of what we've done with the other events, I mean, and that's a lot different than the Veterans Day Parade or anything else, but if we start trying to do more than full cost recovery, and become a partner again, an economic partner, a financial partner, at a time where we're unwilling to do anything with anyone else, I just think that doesn't pass the smell test.
And it is different. I guess the thing I would say is that potentially you could take the revenue to help fund some of the other events. So if you have the potential for that occurring. But we do partner right now. You already had it going somewhere else?
No, I know. You just saw him winding up.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Tom and I like nothing better than a good debate. But we do right now, we get a percentage of ticket sales with the Mesa Amphitheater. We get a percentage of ticket sales when a promoter comes in, and that's a piece of it. And so my question to you would be, would you have a problem if we weren't called co-promoters, if what we said is, and we want a percentage of the ticket sales? Forget it being called a co-promoter. This then becomes an event, just like an event that we were running at the amphitheater, just like we're running anyplace else. It just happens to be in a park.
And that's why I described it as a hybrid, because you also have the history where it's a community event that has this history of being sponsored by the city. And so I'm not sure that I would feel comfortable going straight commercialized either. So I'm looking for more of a hybrid to match what I think is a hybrid event.
Okay, well, I think we've all got a lot to think about here. Councilmember Griswold?
Just on the last few years, the Cinco de Mayo has not been a hybrid. It's been a commercial. It's been fenced off. It's been raising money. The city didn't even get cost recovery, but we provided free policemen and other things in the past or at a reduced cost. It didn't get a full recovery. That was our participation in it. Then we stepped back and said, we want full recovery if you want to put it on. And amazingly, the two groups really wanted to put it on, and because it was a profit motive in there. So, as I said, I agree with the Vice Mayor. I would treat it more like the, an event in one of our facilities that we do. I really don't want to be a co-promoter, but whatever you want to call it, change the name and, charge the fee and go from there and have some kind of way. If two promoters want to do the same event, how you decide. Although I trust you to decide.
Go ahead, Rhett.
Thank you. Regardless, and if I could just end with this comment, whatever we decide to do, whether it's co-promotion or allow an individual to take it on himself, we're back to the original issue, which is how do we decide who that person is? So it would have to be, we'd still need to do an RFP process to be able to award that to someone. So that's something else to be thinking about.
Councilmember Tom. I did a blank. What's your last name?
Thank you, Vice Mayor Claudia. And I agree with that. I mean, I think you've got a fairly good 550-point matrix identified. It was just the financial portion of that matrix that was the way it was couched. So I think that's appropriate.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Summers?
Remembered my last name. How do you do it at the amphitheater? If I want to book the 5th of May for long speeches, and Rex wants to book it for long speeches, same time, same place, how do you pick
short speeches?
In that particular case, it's a first-come, first-basis. So if you would have called before Rex, you would have received the event. The one thing, though, that we do there is, and not to get into the long, drawn-out how it works, but we basically book it by artist. You could have two promoters that are wanting to do the same act, but ultimately the agent will give the act to Rex versus you, and then we would do the show with Rex. So it kind of works itself out because they can't split the artist in two, although we'd like to do that sometimes.
Well, we are a comedy troupe, but is there a way to use that same model for this event other than going into this type of...
I think the situation here is a little different simply because the city owned the event for the 18 years and had partners of which are both interested in the event.
I understand, but maybe it's time to let history be history, and now it's a for-profit event. Like, the only difference is we're holding it in a park, and there are going to have to be some concerns with that.
But Rhett, when you do an event in the amphitheater, you negotiate a fee that includes not only recovery, there's an assumed rental fee and cost you cover for the amphitheater, and you're trying to negotiate the best fee
for the city, because you're receiving revenues
off of
from
ticket
that.
Sales.
So that's not been done at this event in the past.
And maybe it's just time to start doing that.
Right. But that's kind of where council wants to go, that's certainly one way to look at it, is by providing exclusive use to a forum, a venue like this, then what role would the city's proposing? One proposal is, maybe co-promoters maybe sounds a little too embedded there, but certainly what one of the discussions we're having, we ought to at least be able to cover our cost, whatever that might be, and does that include a rental of the park facility? Because again, by its very nature, it's excluding anybody else who might want to come in and rent a pavilion for some other activity.
At that day and time, just as we would if it were the amphitheater, excluding others at that day and time.
So what's the appropriate, that's where we can come back and have that discussion.
Mike?
The other thing is, we are dealing with history, and we are dealing with our Sister Cities Association, who that has been their entire fundraising endeavor, other than dues, and the good economic development work that they've done for the city for some 10 to 15 years. So, that's the other part of the problem that Rhett's very much aware of. And, maybe you look at, if you're going to do a RFP process, that you lock it down for multiple years so that you're not going through this problem every year. And maybe you give a contract for 3 years to one and 3 years to the other, and you see how it works out. Because there is a difference between for-profit and non-profit in my mind. And what does the for-profit group do for the city versus what does the non-profit group do for the city?
Of course, we have the legal opinion on that
that
weighs into it, that we really can't get to that place. Okay, I'm going to take this last comment, and then we're going to wrap up, because I don't think we're at a place. I'm still not hearing a place where we can get to four votes. Okay, then we'll hold that, and we'll bring this back in 2 weeks when I believe we will have. Will we have all of our council members here?
October
1st.
Fourth.
It's.
Or you do the first on the Monday.
Yeah, I've already got another big study session that day.
Okay. Well, we'll let you struggle with that.
When are those first?
And when it's coming forward to us. But I Rhett, did you want some other direction from us or some other thoughts?
I just wanted to make sure. Are you okay with the information that we have? Or are there any other information that you need between now and the date we come back?
Other information, council members? No, we're good.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time. And thanks for getting dressed up to come and see us.
Sherry does look good.
I'm going to have to stop giving him a hard time. Okay. Hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Anybody have anything quick here? All right. Then we'll move on to scheduling of meetings and general information.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Just a reminder, we have two sessions coming up, September 20th study session, September 27th study session. Then the first council meeting in October will be October 1st. And we do plan on having a study session preceding that study session October 1st. We'll give you a time, but it'll be a little bit earlier than usual. Thank you.
Excellent. Items from citizens present. Do we have any speakers?
No speakers, Vice Mayor.
All right, then we'll adjourn the study session, and we will convene a regular council meeting for the purpose of a special council meeting, excuse me, for the purposes of convening an executive session. Do I have a motion to move to go?
Second.
Motion and second to go into executive session. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.